Well, brothers and sisters, I'll echo Brother Mark's thank you for turning out on such a horrible night. And I'm sorry for some of you, it's to hear me for the second time this week. So two bad things together. We're going to look at a number of passages, well, a lot of passages in Isaiah tonight, hence why there's been no introductory reading. They'll all be appearing on the screen, so unless you want to, there's no need to turn them up. But if you can't see the screen, and passages, do feel free to move forward so you're a bit closer. I want you to imagine yourself just for a moment living at the end of Old Testament times. Jesus has not yet born, so the Messiah hasn't appeared, and the New Testament, of course, hasn't been written. You may be able to read, but whether you have anything available to read of the scriptures, of course, is another question. You have to rely on what you may hear from the priests in the temple or perhaps possibly in some local area where you may live. And it's against that background that we initially have to think about the message that Isaiah gave. Just think what a joy it must have been to have heard some of the prophecies that Isaiah gave about the Messiah. Something to look forward to at some future time, despite the troubled periods that Israel had gone through during Old Testament times. The first verse of the book tells us that Isaiah worked through the reigns of four kings of Judah, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And it seems likely also that he probably worked during the reign of Manasseh. And as we're seeing from our readings at the moment, that was a particularly turbulent time, and the people suffered greatly. His ministry probably totaled some 40 to 50 years. Why is this not moving? Wait for the computer to catch up. There we are. Yes, Isaiah probably worked for some 40 to 60 years in total. As the slide says, it's the third longest book of the Bible. It has more quotations from it in the New Testament than any of the other books of the Bible. And there are at least 54 direct quotations and about 250 other links in the New Testament that can be related back to Isaiah. And many of those links, of course, occur within the four gospel records. And as we go through those gospels, you can find a key word, a phrase, or a quotation in the New Testament that it can be found in Isaiah and appears to be drawn out from there. In fact, there are references in the New Testament to some 47 chapters of the whole of Isaiah. Well, probably the most significant feature of Isaiah's prophecy is the full, varied and integrated account that he gives of the work of Christ to come. And the problem for me tonight was to know how best to summarize that work in the space of some 35 to 40 minutes. And I've chosen to do so by working through five particular themes that I think bring together various facets of the way that Isaiah set out his prophecy. So we have the branch, a stone or rock, light, a child, and a king. And in going through these various sections, we'll draw on some links in other parts of the Old Testament, particularly from the law in Deuteronomy, and also see some New Testament links as well. So first, this idea of the branch. Going back to the life of Abraham, we know that he was promised not just a seed, but also a land. And beyond this, in this reference on the screen, the children of Israel were told that this land was to be a good land, a fertile one. Just picking up the last two verses, "Then I will give you the rain for your land in its season, the early rain and the latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine and your oil. And I will send grass in your fields for your livestock, that you may eat and be filled." God in the promised land was going to provide for Israel all the things that they needed for the course of their life. But of course we know that Israel didn't stay loyal to God. He warned them in that long chapter 28 of Deuteronomy of the blessings that would come upon them if they served him faithfully, and of the curses if he did not. And then they were told in Deuteronomy 29, "The anger of the Lord was aroused against this land to bring on it every curse that is written in this book. And the Lord uprooted them from their land in anger, in wrath and in great indignation, and cast them into another land as it is this day." Their own land was to become barren and to lose that fruitfulness. And so by the time of the prophecy of Isaiah, the promise, the land of promise had been stripped and devastated by the Assyrians. And so Isaiah writes, "Your country is desolate, your cities are burned with fire, strangers devour your land in your presence, and it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers." And note the reference in verse 9 that unless God had spared them, the very small remnant, the land would have become like Sodom and Gomorrah. And Isaiah had to tell them that worse was still to come. "It shall happen in that day that wherever there could be 1,000 vines worth 1,000 shekels of silver, it will be for briars and thorns, with arrows and bows of men will come there, because all the land will become briars and thorns. And to any hill which could be dug with the hoe, you will not go there for fear of briars and thorns. It will become a range for oxen, a place for sheep to roam." And he continues in chapter 6, "The land would be reduced to a stump. Then I said, Lord, how long? And he answered, until the cities are laid waste and without inhabitant, the houses are without a man, the land is utterly desolate. The Lord has removed men far away, in the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. And yet a tenth will be in it, and will return and be for consuming, as a terebinth tree or as an oak, whose stump remains when it is cut down, so the holy seed shall be its stump." So Isaiah was able to look beyond the destruction of the land to better things to come in the future. And so he brings to us the mentioning of the branch. "In that day 7 women shall take hold of one man, saying, we will eat our own food and wear our own apparel. Only let us be called by your name to take away our reproach. In that day the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious. For the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and appealing for those of Israel who have escaped." So the stump was soon to give out a branch, leading to the restoration of the land. And we have those very familiar words, I don't think I need to read them all, from Isaiah chapter 11. "There shall come forth a rod from the stem," or stump as the NIV gives, "of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of its roots." It's this house of David that had been reduced to a stump was to have a branch grow from it. And that branch was ultimately to become very fruitful and to restore the original promised land. And then in chapter 53, Isaiah shows this prophecy relating to the coming Messiah. Who has believed our report, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of dry ground. He has no form or comeliness, and when we see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. Of course, we're able to see how that prophecy was fulfilled so dramatically in the life of the Messiah. And we have John in his Gospel, chapter 15, showing how the vine is to bear branches, the vine of the Messiah. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. What a contrast to the time of Isaiah, when the people of Israel had not abided with God, but had turned against him and deserted him, and the land became unfruitful. And what a great hope for us, dear brothers and sisters, that we can be part of the vine of Christ. Well, let's then move on now to the stone or the rock. The Old Testament background is set out in at least of these two passages from Deuteronomy 32 and Psalm 18. For I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock. His work is perfect. In Deuteronomy and Psalm 18, the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. And we see God as being the rock that can be relied upon. But again, Isaiah has to give warning that that is not always the case. The Lord of hosts, him shall you shall hallow. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. He will be as a sanctuary, but a stone of stumbling and a rock of offence to both the houses of Israel, as a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them shall stumble. They shall fall and be broken, be snared and taken. Yes, Israel could have relied upon God, but they failed to do so, and they stumbled on the rock. And then, in contrast, we have the Messiah foreseen by Isaiah. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, behold, I lay in Zion a stone for a foundation, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. Whoever believes will not act hastily. And then again in the 32nd chapter, behold, a king will reign in righteousness, and princes will rule with justice. A man will be as a hiding place from the wind, and a cover from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place, as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. The eyes of those who see will not be dim, and the ears of those who hear will not listen. Those who hear will listen. Again, the rock could be relied upon if Israel had put their trust in that rock. And Peter brings all of these thoughts together for us in his first letter. He takes in the fifth verse there, my apologies, in the sixth verse, the quotation there from Isaiah. Coming to him as to a living stone, rejected indeed by men, but chosen by God and precious. You also, as living stones, are being built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Verse 8, we have the stone of stumbling and the rock of offence. Those who fail to put their trust in the Messiah stumble, being disobedient to the word to which they were also appointed. Let's move on to think about light. An important concept throughout the prophecy of Isaiah, with the people forsaking the light of God's word and putting themselves into darkness. References from Isaiah chapter 8, and we'll pick out particularly verses 20 and 22. To the law and to the testimony. If they do not speak according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. Verse 22, then they will look to the earth and see trouble and darkness, gloom of anguish, and they will be driven into darkness. Yes, those who fail to put their trust in the Messiah would live in darkness. But in contrast, in the next chapter, we have again probably very familiar words to us that put a complete contrast. The prophecy of the coming of the Messiah. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. I'm sure we're familiar with most of those words. We see how the Messiah would bring light to the people, to bring light into the gloom and darkness of a sinful world. And in chapter 60, Isaiah shows us that this is to be wider than just to the people of Israel. The concept was not just for Israel of his time, nor just for the Jews of any age, but Isaiah shows that the clear light will also be shown to the Gentiles through the work of the Messiah. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and deep darkness the people, but the Lord will arise over you, and his glory will be seen upon you. The Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes all around and see. They all gather together, they come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, and your daughters shall be nursed at your side. And a similar message is given in the 42nd chapter. And these words are used in Luke 1 in relation particularly to John the Baptist, the forerunner of the Messiah. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness and will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentiles, to open blind eyes, to bring out prisoners from the prison, those who sit in darkness from the prison house. I am the Lord. That is my name, and my glory I will not give to another, nor my praise to carved images. And you may be familiar with the passage again in Peter's letter about preaching to the spirits in prison, the work of Christ in so doing. And it's clear from Isaiah that he's referring to a prison of sin and death. Those who need to have life brought to them, because the result of sin, as we know, is death. And these things are summed up for us in chapter 49. where the idea of light coming to prisoners and darkness is brought together, and we have the concept of salvation and some words that clearly relate to the Messiah. Thus says the Lord, the Redeemer of Israel, their Holy One, to him whom man despises, to him whom the nation abhors, to the servant of rulers, kings shall see and arise. Princes also shall worship, because the Lord, who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel, and he has chosen you. Verse 9, that you may say to the prisoners, go forth. To those who are in darkness, show yourselves. In verse 10, they shall neither hunger nor thirst, neither heat nor sun shall strike them, for he who has mercy on them will lead them. Even by the springs of water he will guide them. And of course, those latter words about having neither hunger nor thirst, neither heat nor sun, are brought out again in the book of Revelation. Therefore they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple, and he who sits on the throne, the Messiah, will dwell among them. They shall neither hunger any more nor thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to living fountains of waters, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Just think how wonderful it would have been to hear the words of Isaiah prophesying these things so many years earlier, when you're living in a land of darkness and under attack and under siege. Turn now to think about the theme of a child. In looking at the branch, the stone, and light so far, we've been thinking about analogies to the coming of the Messiah. But now the matter becomes perhaps a little more personal and individual. We find that children or a child play a quite strong part throughout Isaiah's prophecy. But first, let's again go back to Deuteronomy. Some words of how stubborn children are to be dealt with. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastened him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him to the elders of his city, to the gate of his city. And they shall say to the elders, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious, he will not obey our voice, he is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of this city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Not pleasant words to read, but they show us what God commanded at this time and the harsh punishment that was to be meted out. Of course, the particular children who were to be dealt with in that way were the people themselves. Deuteronomy 32, they have corrupted themselves. They are not his children because of their blemish, a perverse and crooked generation. Do you thus deal with the Lord, O foolish and unwise people? Is he not your father who bought you? Has he not made you and established you? And then, by the time of Isaiah, in his first chapter, verse 2, hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken, I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. And Isaiah has to tell them in the third chapter, the words of God, that as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, those who lead you cause you to err, and destroy the way of your paths. A dramatic way of saying how bad the rulers and leaders of Israel had been. He's saying that being led by children and women wasn't enough. They needed a strong hand, a strong arm to take them in the ways of right. You may recall that in the pages of Isaiah, we're introduced to two sons, Shir Jeshub, whose name means a remnant shall return, and Meher Shalal Hashbaz, which is usually taken to mean something like swift is the booty, speedy is the prey, or hasten the booty, hasten the spoil, or something along those lines. Well, these children were to be used by Isaiah within his prophecy. And so he says, here am I and the children whom the Lord has given me. We are for signs and wonders in Israel from the Lord of hosts who dwells in Mount Zion. And so Isaiah and his children were given as signs. But in addressing King Ahaz in chapter 7, we have these words. A more important sign that was to be given. Verse 12, Ahaz said, I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord. Then he said, hear now, our house of David, is it a small thing for you to weary men? But will you weary my God also? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. And of course we see there the reference particularly to Jesus. Well, we've already looked at the familiar words of Isaiah 11, but from these a little later in the chapter, the details of this child, Emmanuel, that is to come from the stem of Jesse. So we read about the wolf dwelling with the lamb, the cow and the bear grazing, the nursing child playing on the cobra's hole, not hurting or destroying in all God's holy mountain. And verse 10, in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, who shall stand as a banner to the people, for the Gentiles shall seek him, and his resting place shall be glorious. So we see the reign of peace that the child Emmanuel, the Messiah, is later to bring. The knowledge of God that is to fill the world. And we see how that branch from the stem of Jesse is to take on such significance. More familiar words in Isaiah 9. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice from that time forward, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. Just think of the time when Isaiah was speaking these words. Just think of those kings that we've been reading about. Ahaz, Manasseh, the sins that they committed. And we're told, we read the other night, that the sins were worse than their predecessors. So now we'll turn to the final section, thinking about the king. And that passage we just looked at introduces that by speaking of the kingdom that would be to come. Again, we go back to Deuteronomy. The words to Moses about what the kings were to be like. Verse 16, he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. These were the things that the kings were not to do. As we just said, Isaiah had experience of a number of kings. He had to compare his experience with them to the requirements that God had given. He was also able to compare them with the standard that David had set, who is often, as we again find in the book of Kings, put forward as the example that so many failed to follow. And all of those kings, with the exception of Hezekiah during Isaiah's reign, were found badly wanting. And even in Hezekiah, there were some difficulties. And so we have passages from Isaiah. Chapter 33, verse 17. Your eyes will see the king in his beauty. They will see the land that is very far off. These were the words of hope that Jesus would fulfill. Look upon Zion, the city of our appointed feasts. Your eyes will see Jerusalem, a quiet home, a tabernacle that will not be taken down. Not one of its stakes will ever be removed, nor will any of its cords be broken. But there the majestic Lord will be for us a place of broad rivers and streams, in which no galley with oars will sail, nor majestic ships pass by. For the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king. He will save us. Again, put yourself as in the position of someone in the times of Isaiah, the times of Hezekiah, with the city besieged. And Isaiah says that things will become so much better. There will be a king, a lawgiver, and a fair judge, none other than the Messiah, the Christ, that is to come. And his kingdom would encompass the whole world in fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecies. A kingdom so different from anything Israel had known to that time. A time of peace rather than war. A time of plenty rather than famine. A time of righteousness rather than corruption. And so Isaiah looks forward to this future king. Behold my servant whom I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He will not cry out, nor raise his voice, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench. He will bring forth justice for truth. He will not fail nor be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands shall wait for his law. And these words are used by Jesus of himself in Matthew chapter 12. And there we read that Jesus warned them not to make it known, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet. And then that full quotation from verse 3 is given through the words of Jesus. Well, we've really merely skimmed the surface of what Isaiah says about the coming Christ. Deliberately, I've chosen not to look at that section that contains what are commonly known as the servant prophecies, the servant songs, and I've chosen not to put in detail about Isaiah 53, which I think we all know very well about the suffering and death of our Master. What I hope I have done in some small way is to show how the inspired words of Isaiah look forward to Christ and to his role and the position in relation to the law as originally given, and how some of those themes of Isaiah are picked up within the pages of the New Testament. What I've also not had time to consider is the roots of the gospel message of Jesus that we find contained in some of the latter books of Isaiah's prophecy. I want to conclude by just reading two sections from Isaiah chapter 60, because I think they're such wonderful chapters for us. Arise, shine, for your light has come. The glory of the Lord is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and deep darkness the people, but the Lord will arise over you, and his glory will be seen upon you. The Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes all around and see. They all gather together, they come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, and your daughters shall be nursed at your side. Then you shall see and become radiant, and your heart shall swell with joy, because the abundance of the sea shall be turned to you. The wealth of the Gentiles shall come to you. And from verse 19, again words picked up in Revelation, the sun shall no longer be your light by day, nor for brightness shall the moon give light to you. For the Lord will be to you an everlasting light, and your God your glory. Your sun shall no longer go down, nor shall your moon withdraw itself. For the Lord will be your everlasting light, and the days of your mourning shall be ended. Also your people shall be righteous, shall all be righteous. They shall inherit the land forever, the branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I may be glorified. And how much we long for Jesus to bring that time for us.